WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. My guest is Paul Mazursky, the director who teamed up Woody Allen and Bette Midler in the new movie Scenes from a Mall. Mazursky's 14 films include Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Harry and Tonto, Next Stop Greenwich Village, An Unmarried Woman, Moscow on the Hudson, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Moon Over Parador, and Enemy's Love Story. In Scenes from a Mall, Woody Allen and Bette Midler play a couple about to celebrate their 16th wedding anniversary with a big dinner party in their Beverly Hills home. They're spending the day in the mall, shopping for the party. Allen is a successful sports lawyer. Midler is a best-selling pop psychologist. But her self-help advice on surviving your mate's affair isn't very useful when she finds out her own husband has been involved with another woman. Who would have thought of casting the introspective, cerebral Woody Allen opposite the extroverted, brassy Bette Midler? I asked Mazursky why he brought together these two opposites.
It's a fair question, and many people ask me, but I have a variety of answers. One is that most marriages that I've known, and I've been married a long time and have known a lot of married people, you wonder how they got together. Often they seem to be opposites. You know, the guy is a baseball fan and watches football and this and that, and the woman has no interest in it. I've rarely met couples who are, they both love to do everything together, you know, that right. kind of thing. So that I found perfectly normal. Secondly, it seemed at the time, and I still think it's a good idea, to try to match these two, you know, famous people who you would not think would be together, just to see what would happen.
This is Woody Allen's first role in another director's film since The Front. Was he initially enthusiastic about this? Did you have
yes.
to sell him on it?
No. I called Sam Cohen, who's my agent and is his agent. I said, I have a script. He said, well, I know the script. I said, you think Woody might be interested? He said, he might. He's looking for a job. He wants to work in another person's movie to make money. Sent him the script on Saturday. On Monday, he called and said he wants to do it. That's how easy it was.
So what did you tell Woody Allen about how you wanted him to act compared to the kind of character he usually plays in his own
well,
movies?
Well, I didn't tell him how I wanted him to act. I told him I wanted a ponytail, and at first he was resistant, but then...
I could see why.
why do you say that? Tell me.
Well, there's something so trendy about that kind of ponytail now.
Right. I wanted him to be trendy. I wanted right. him to be someone other than the Woody Allen you see in Woody Allen movies.
Yeah, he's very stylish in this, very clothes conscious.
I wanted him to be trendy. I wanted him to be, you know, someone who, while he's from New York, and you can't pretend he's not, has been in L.A. a long time and has picked up some of the moonwalker and silly, crazy, trendy things, which that's a whole topic you and I could talk about, because as trendy as L.A. is, and I think it is, I think New York is I see ponytails all over the joint here. I mean,
New York, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely.
It's Ponytail City. I mean, you don't know if it's horses or people. Woody will say to you, I'm not really an actor. I just play this person, so I can't cry and I can't do this. But he is an actor. The person he played in Crimes and Misdemeanors is not the same person he played in Broadway Danny Rose. And that's not the same person he played in Annie Hall.
Would you have considered casting yourself in the lead in the part that Woody Allen plays? I really enjoy you as an actor, well as a director. Now, you wouldn't have probably gotten the same amount of money to produce the movie, I realize. But
well, I'm always kind of like a little screwed up in the head about playing the lead in my own movies. That didn't appeal to Disney. So, and I didn't think much about myself playing that particular part. I have thought about myself playing parts in some other movies. I ended up playing other parts, but not the lead.
You gave yourself a nice cameo in this.
It's a small cameo. I mean, I had a good part in Enemies. Yeah, I like to act. You know, and Woody like said to me when we finished making the movie, he says, you're funnier than me. Why don't you star in your next picture? So maybe I'll do it.
Now, you started off doing stand-up comedy, right?
I was a nightclub comic in New York. I worked clubs that some of which you'll know, the Village Vanguard, the Bonsoir, the Ruben Blue, the 15th Avenue, upstairs or the downstairs. That was the time of Mike Nichols, Elaine May, Lenny Bruce, Jonathan Winters. And I had a partner named Herb Hartig, and we were called Igor and H.
Why?
Well, I was Igor and he was H. Who knows? You know, we had a funny name. We didn't want to say Hartig and Mazursky, although maybe we should have. And then I broke up with Herb and I did the act myself for about 3 years and ended up in Los Angeles.
What kind of comics were you exposed to when you were growing up? Did you go to the Borscht Belt a lot? See the Jewish comics like Myron Cohn?
I did go to the Borscht Belt a lot. And as a matter of fact, I played Storyville, a place in Boston that's mostly jazz, as a comic myself. And I was on the bill with Roberta Sherwood and Myron Cohn. I followed Myron Cohn. In other words, he was finishing his 4 weeks, and then I followed. And he was a great raconteur and told those long stories. You know, Schwartz came up to his best friend and said, you know, what is a good Shabbos to you? And those jokes, you know. You know, Schwartz meets Cohn in the garment district. He says, I heard about the fire. Shh, tomorrow. That was not my joke. I used to tell that joke whenever I get into trouble. So I worked at Catskills for 5 years as a waiter. And on the weekends in some of the places, they were so broke that I was the social director and did a combination of comedy and Shakespeare, I swear.
Like what?
Well, I would make up funny things. I would imitate famous people, but give them names of customers who I knew were at the hotel. For example, I would do like, Clark Gable. Now look here, Mrs. Schwartz. I know your flunking is well done, but I'm going to tell you right now that I've got no control over our head waiter, Edward G. Robinson. Now listen here, Mrs. Schwartz, that flunking is not well done. Well, I would mention the names of the people in the hotel. You just say their name. They would plots, which in Yiddish means die, fall on the floor, hit, kick each other. And then when I would finish about 40 minutes of that, I would do a soliloquy from Hamlet. to give them you know, culture. And they loved it. They would cry. Such a nice boy, they would say. I should make a movie about all that. It was funny as hell.
Oh, that sounds great.
And it worked. I would do Peter Lorre as the angry busboy, you know? Hey, I can't smile. You got dirt all over my tray. You know, and it was a joke, but it was funny. That was probably funnier than my nightclub act.
Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. My guest is screenwriter and director and actor Paul Mazursky, and his new movie, Scenes from a Mall, co-stars Bette Midler and Woody Allen, with Paul Mazursky in a little cameo part. He also directed Enemies of Love Story, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Moscow on the Hudson, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Next Stop Greenwich Village, An Unmarried Woman, and Harry and Tonto. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. Film director and screenwriter Paul Mazursky is my guest. His new movie is Scenes from a Mall. It stars Bette Midler and Woody Allen. He also directed Enemies of Love Story, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Moscow on the Hudson, Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice, Next Stop Greenwich Village, An Unmarried Woman, and Harry and Tonto. I'm thinking of your movie Moon Over Parador. Now, Richard Dreyfuss starred in that as a hammy, second-rate actor who actually gets the job of having to impersonate a dictator.
He's forced to take the job.
He's forced to take it, right, in a Latin American country. Mm. This is a really funny spoof of, like, actors' egos, and I'm wondering, having been an actor, having directed actors, if you've come up against that kind of ego a lot.
Well, of course I have. You know, I mean, I probably got it myself. But the problem with actors and actresses is you could say to an actor, how are you? And the actor says, I'm just fine. Isn't this war terrible with the scuds they're dropping and the amount of killing and this maniac who's sane? And I think I'm up for a general hospital. Really? Yeah, I don't know whether to take it or not. They were offering me 18. It's a two-week thing. But if I take the general hospital, then I won't be able to do the... I also was up for a commercial, but I don't know if I should do the commercial because it's a thing that's for the Marines. And I'm not sure if I should do it, the commercial with the Marines. But I might do a Matlock. And I don't know. So, and a Matlock. Well, after an hour of that, you're dead. You can't take it anymore. But that's what they do. They can't help it.
We also get the feeling from Moon Over Parador that you can flatter an actor into doing anything.
Anything. Anything. You could say to an actor, you are the most wonderful actor. That is the greatest performance I've ever seen. I want you to kill my wife. Where's the gun? They're not normal, believe me. And I'll tell you something. We're vulnerable, and I am too, because we pretend we don't care about reviews. The only one I think Woody says he doesn't care. He doesn't read them. He doesn't know anything about it. He says that. I don't know the truth, because I do know he often says, I hear that the reaction was pretty good. But he doesn't read them. But actors and actors and directors, you know, they read everything.
Now, one of your early movies, Next Stop Greenwich Village, is about a boy from Brooklyn who moves to Greenwich Village hoping to become an actor.
Yeah.
It's set in 1953. Is this autobiographical?
Yes. Everything that I do has some autobiographical stuff in it, even the ones they don't know. Mm-hmm. But that was more. That was definitely more. That was sort of a memoir of my last year in Brooklyn and my first year in Greenwich Village. And it's sort of, I took many events that happened and some events that didn't happen and fooled around with them. It's not literal at all times. It really isn't.
Did you have a Shelley Winters kind of mother?
I did.
Domineering
I did.
Mother?
I did. I had a very... I was thinking this morning, as a matter of fact, when I was sitting in a steam room in a hotel, of a book that I might write someday, because maybe the time is coming close. And I was thinking of chapters, and they would all be names of the people that were influential in my life. And the first one, of course, would be Jean, who was my mother.
I don't know if your mother's still alive, but...
No, she's not.
Did she live to see any of your movies?
She saw Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice. She was at the opening in New York at the New York Film Festival.
Oh, great. The one about sex. Perfect.
The one about sex. And she sat there with me and Natalie Wood and my wife and Bob Culp and Elliot Gould and Diane Cannon and Mayor Lindsay. When it was over, she said to me, "Oh, so don't be such a big shot." That was my mother's... You know what I mean?
I sure do, yeah.
I mean, she was powerful and funny, and I had a lot of trouble with her. But she was definitely, I would guess, that the source of my pain and inspiration at the same time with the movies. But I now that it's all so many years ago, think about it with great affection. At the time, I was afraid of her. I really was.
Was it hard to leave her and to go to the West Coast?
That was a relief.
Mm-hmm.
The West Coast was, oh, boy, I did it. I'm free. But she soon found her way out there.
Oh, really?
And then she said to me, "I don't like it. It's a lot of palm trees." And she went back. She didn't want to stay there.
Huh. Director Paul Mazursky is my guest. Did you co-create The Monkees, the TV
yes,
show?
Yes, I with Larry Tucker.
What was your contribution to it?
Well, Larry and I were writing for Danny Kaye, which was on in the early 63, 4, 5, 6. And we were approached by Bert Schneider and Bob Ravelson, who knew we were very funny or heard we were funny and, quote, hip, unquote. And they said, "Look, we want to do a show, a TV, half-hour TV show that's in the style of the Beatles, of Help, of those movies." So we went and looked at a couple of the movies, and we wrote this one episode and called it The Monkees. And our names are on it. And then we had a lot of lawsuits later because that was before the Writers Guild gave you separation of rights in a protected way. And when the thing started selling a lot of socks and toys and monkey T-shirts, they said they created it. They gave us the name Monkees. And we said, "No, you didn't." And we had a lot of arguing. In any case, we're in the pilot, the first show.
You have a part?
Oh, yeah, both of us are in it. Sorry. I'm a man on the street interviewer, and Larry's a man I'm interviewing about violence in the streets and how terrible it is that people don't stop and help other people while they're being mugged. And while I'm doing the interview, the monkeys are being mugged by some guy right behind us, and he runs away. So it was funny.
Do you look back at the monkey shows and say, "Hey, that was really pretty good," or do you look back and laugh and go, "What a knockoff"?
No, I look back and say we would not have written it if they hadn't come to us. We didn't invent the style because the Beatles did, but all things considered, it was a pretty far-out thing for television. And it had a lot of crazy style, and it had energy. And we saw something. I'm sort of proud of it. Of course, it's an odd feeling when people come up to me and say, "Are you Paul Mazursky?" I say, "Yes." They said, "We love your work." And I say, "Oh, well, thank you." And I'm positive they're going to say something about the Holocaust or Moon Over Parrot, or they say, hey, we're the monkeys." So,
My guest is film director Paul Mazursky. His new movie, Scenes from a Mall, stars Bette Midler and Woody Allen. More in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. Film director Paul Mazursky is my guest. You changed your name from Irwin to Paul?
Wouldn't you?
You didn't like the name Irwin. It smacked of an older generation to you?
No, Irwin was my name, Irwin Mazursky, and there was a play called Three Men on a Horse, and the main character was Irwin, and he was a nerd, you know, Irwin, and my mother used to come out in Brooklyn, always like Jerry Lewis, it sounds to me now, and called for me. I was playing punch ball in the street or something. Irwin! Irwin! I hated it. Had she called me Yisrael or something, Israel, son of God, I probably would have liked it. So in 1951, when I was graduating from college, I got into Stanley Kubrick's first film. He didn't know he was Stanley Kubrick. I didn't know who I was. I was Irwin Mazursky. It's called Fear and Desire. And a year or so later, the woman who later became my wife, Betsy, called me and said, you've got to come up with a name. They're putting the titles on Fear and Desire. And Kubrick called her to call me. Do you want to use Irwin Mazursky? I said, and I was in a phone booth in the Catskills, you know. And I said, well, I hate Irwin, but I don't want to give up Mazursky. I like Mazursky. What about Bart Mazursky? Clark Mazursky? What about Humphrey Mazursky? And I started going through. I said, this is true. This is funnier than my movies. I should do all of this. Anyway, finally, the operator said, you know, your 3 minutes is up. And she said, what about my father's name, Purdy? I said, what about Paul Purdy? The operator said, and your time. And I said, Paul Mazursky. And I hung up, and that was it.
That's great.
That's a true story.
Which is on your credit cards and everything. Are you Paul?
Paul Mazursky, but on my passport it says Irwin L. Mazursky, a.k.a. Paul Mazursky. So when I go to strange places, they don't know the difference. Sometimes it says Paul. I'm Paul Mazursky.
I want to ask you a little bit about your approach to casting. I think you've come up with a lot of really interesting actors over the years in your movies.
Mm-hmm.
Are you in on that yourself, the casting?
I cast in all movies.
Yeah.
I cast extras.
Oh, really?
I'm compulsive about it. I have help. I have wonderful casting directors. But I am the person who casts every part. Every part. From the top to the bottom, from the beginning to the end.
Well, you know, you hear stories about, like, Robert Altman, an actor just walks into his office, and Altman just talks with him a few minutes and knows if they want to use the actor or not. That's not your approach, is it?
Sometimes. Sometimes it is. I've had different approaches, I'll tell you what they are real quickly. Sometimes I've just seen an actor in a film, and I know from that film that they can do what I want, but I just want to meet them in the flesh. And often with big parts. Lena Olin, I saw in The Unbearable Lightness of Being. I flew to London to meet her. I met her with her clothes on. And I still gave her the part. Ron Silver, I saw in Speed the Plow. I had dinner with him. I talked to him. I never talked to him about enemies. I then sent him the script and offered him the part. Margaret Stein, the Polish actress who played Jadwiga, I read her. Someone told me about her, and she read for me for about 20, 30 minutes. I gave her the part. Sometimes, next up, Greenwich Village, I read every kid living for that part and finally ended up with Lenny Baker. So I do different things. Once in a while, I was taking a cab to Marion Dougherty's office, the casting director's office, and the cab driver was a woman. She talked so much and was so amusing that I said to her, do you think you could act? She says, why not? I mean, I'm driving this piece of junk. So we parked the cab, let the meter run. She came in and read for me. And I gave her the part as the cab driver in Harry and Tonto.
We're just about out of time. I have one more question for you, though. Do you end up doing a lot of stand-up on the set when you're directing?
Yeah. Yeah, I do a lot of it. It's the only time I do it. I lose all of my, you know, I don't know, inhibitions and have a lot of fun. And I really enjoy it. I like to be funny. You know, to cover the deep, powerful pain.
The miserable insecurity.
The miserable insecurity. Now, I do it for a lot of reasons, but I didn't think I would do it in the Woody Allen Bette Midler movie.
Oh, sure, because here you have like two people who are still doing comedy.
Well, yeah, Woody, I said, I'm not doing it with Woody. He's going to give me weird. But I started doing it, he used to laugh. He used to put his hand over his mouth. He could not stop laughing at me. So we had a lot of fun. And I've enjoyed myself. I've had a, you know, quite a thrilling career, meeting wonderful Natalie Wood and Fellini and Jean Moreau and Donald Sutherland and Isaac Singer. And, you know, these are icons. Marvin Icahn, I met. I tell you, as a man, if you ever met him, you're just such a great man.
It's really been a pleasure talking with you. I want to thank you a lot for talking with us on the show.
It's my pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Film director Paul Mazursky, his new movie, Scenes from a Mall, stars Woody Allen and Bette Midler.